Sidescape Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today we're going to have a fun time speaking on the phone with Theodore Jerome Cohen. He is the author of a newly released ebook titled Lilith, Demon of the Night. It's a gripping modern-day tale of vampirism that is sure to have you say, oh, wow. This is going to be a very interesting conversation. If you know about vampires, you'll appreciate hearing our conversation. If you're new to vampires, stay tuned because you're about to learn a lot. But before we talk to Ted, I'd like you to know a little bit about him. Theodore J. Cohen, Ph.D., holds 3 degrees in the physical sciences from the University of Wisconsin-Madison and has been an engineer and scientist for more than 40 years. He has published more than 350 papers, articles, columns, essays, and interviews in the field of communications and electronics. As well, he has authored numerous novels. Hi, Ted.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. Well, this is really a pleasure for me to talk to you again. You are a very prolific writer.
I didn't think it would be this soon, but actually you're the blame.
Well, I'm glad you're moving on and you're having fun doing it too. And this most recent book, Lilith, is about a vampire cult. And I understand that this is based on reality.
Well,
really?
Yes. You know,
really?
All my books are based on reality. I wouldn't write a book if it weren't based on reality.
Okay, well, I can understand the others based on reality, but vampires, come on now.
Well,
prove it to me.
Well, you're the one who wanted this book written. You got to fess up to it. You said, "Come on, Ted. You know, you really have to think outside the box and come up with something a little different." And we started talking, as you recall.
Uh-huh.
This was back in November, which isn't that far back. And we were talking about the things that people were reading today and looking at in the movies, and we were talking about the Twilight Saga and the books on vampires and things like that. And that got me to thinking, and there have been some things in the news.
Mm-hmm.
As recently as I recall, about May of 2006, believe it or not, when there was a teenager in Queens, in a high school in Queens, New York, who attacked 3 girls at a high school up there. And actually it was in Jamaica, Hillcrest High School in Jamaica. And
not Jamaica, the country, but you're talking about...
Right, in Jamaica, New York.
Yeah.
And bit one of the girls on the neck and the face, leaving her quite disfigured with teeth marks at her jawline and on her throat, and actually was going for her jugular. And it's just one of these incredible stories, but the headlines, if you go back, if any of the people listening to this go back and just Google things like teenage vampires, Queens High School, Jamaica, and read some of the newspaper clippings from that time, it reads like something out of a horror movie with titles like Bloodlust Girl Bites Schoolmates and things like that. And even more shocking than that are stories out of Western Germany going back to 2002 when there was a man by the name of Daniel Ruda, a 26-year-old man, and his wife, Manuela, who was 23, who you never really would want to count among your friends, because they basically hacked to death their best friend and then proceeded to drink his blood. So these are things that really happened, and they're chronicled in the popular literature of today. And so based on our discussion and things that I know from my macabre reading, it just dawned on me that this would just make just wonderful grist for my mill. And I thought up this, what I think is a great story that I call Lilith, for Detective Louis Martelli of the NYPD to solve.
So let's just talk a little bit more about the vampires, and before we continue on, and you were talking about the teenager or the couple that you talked about. So some, especially and particularly in the religious realms, would claim that this was that the people were possessed by Satan. Others would claim that maybe these people were on some type of drugs.
In the case of the Rudas, there's no question that they were Satanists. You go back and you look at the history of their relationship. They were married on the sixth day of the sixth month and decided to kill on the 6th of July. And there you have 666, which is the biblical symbol of the devil. So Daniel Ruda was all wound up in this whole thing about Satan, and there's no question he was a Satanist. Now, on the other hand, this young lady who attacked the three of her classmates, I'm not quite sure what they finally decided what her problem was, but the mother of one of the victims said that basically she was evil. I think that pretty well that pretty well puts the pretty well lays out what the problem was. But you know, these stories of people seeking the blood of others, these blood drinking demons, as they have been called, go back centuries before the birth of Christ, to the Persians, who were the first civilizations to have tales of blood drinking demons. And you can even find that inscribed in pottery found in ancient Babylonia, for example, in Assyria. And it's from there, by the way, that I got the story of Lilith and took the name for the book. So there's lots of things that go back, and that of course led to other things. I have an interest, of course, in things of the Middle East, and was able to also bring that. It's a very important part of the world for us to consider today.
You mentioned the Middle East. In your research, did you find that there was a belief in vampires there as well?
There were what?
Was there a belief?
There's no question. I mean, the ancient Persians were the very first civilizations to have these tales.
Okay, and so let's talk about some of those tales. I know you've done a lot of research, and so, you know, over the centuries, I'm sure that the concept has changed some, because, of course, each writer or, you know, adds to it, but let's go back to the original when they the first, you know, sighting supposedly of a vampire. Let's go back to then, and what really were these vampires at that time?
Well, if you go back to ancient Assyria, the Babylonians and the Assyrians had tales of something they called the Lilitu, which were, if you follow the trail, comes up or leads to someone called Lilith in Hebrew, and her daughters, the Lilu, from Hebrew demonology. And that's, of course, where I took the name for the novel. And, interestingly enough, the Lilitu were considered a demon that subsisted on the blood of babies. So that's where, if you go back way into ancient times, this is where you start to find some of the very beginnings. But then you can trace it through Greek and Roman mythology, and you can find witches and demons throughout that time, and you can even and it's not just in the Middle East and around the Mediterranean. You can find them in the Far East, in Japan, and probably in China, and of course, you can find them in Europe. 12th century English historians have documented tales, and Romania, of course, in the 17th and 18th centuries, Croatia. So it's really to be found all over the world, and they come in different forms. As I recall, and I'm doing this from memory now, in Japan, they basically take the form of night creatures that are disembodied, and the head flies about and is the one that seeks blood. So we have just probably as many tales as there are sands on the beaches of the world in terms of what form these creatures take and their names and how they derive from the different cultures.
Do you believe that maybe these were made up to put fear into people? Is this one way of maybe curtailing some of the events that are, you know, things that people would do, and so they would put fear into people by talking about vampires creating these creatures and scaring the people?
Threatening, well, certainly we know from our own history that that there was a fear of the unknown, and that witches were burned at the stake, and that there were always scapegoats that were used for whatever purpose, whether they were used primarily by the church, certainly in early days, as a way of keeping people in line. There was a recent story, as a matter of fact, of a corpse unearthed in Venice, a corpse of a woman that was unearthed in Venice with a piece of a brick in her mouth, and the interpretation made was that I would assume it had been the church, that she was treated as a vampire, and the reason the brick was put in her mouth was to prevent her from feasting on the blood of the victims from the plague.
Mm.
So there were all kinds of, I'm sure to some extent that these were stories done by people. This was 16th century Venice, by the way. These were stories told by people to frighten others, keep them in line, for whatever reason, maybe show what happens if you're not good. I would suppose early on that they probably were tied very closely to the definition of good and evil, to the church.
Mm-hmm. I would think so, too, because it seems that it would fit, and specifically from the areas that, you know, we know that vampirism or belief in came from. So,
and we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Theodore Jerome Cohen, author of Lilith, Demon of the Night. Are you saying wow yet? Interesting stuff, isn't it? Stay tuned because there is going to be so much more about vampires that we're going to talk about. What about werewolves? Every so often, you know, when there's a vampire, there's usually a werewolf too.
I didn't get into that too much, except I was looking around, you know, to see what would be good for killing vampires and killing werewolves.
So, garlic?
Well, garlic is pretty good for keeping vampires in check. There's a funny exchange in the book, and I won't go into it because I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but there's a big discussion in there about silver bullets. And it turns out that silver bullets are really not very good for vampires, but they are good for. Let me see. I'm pretty sure they're good for werewolves.
Okay.
I think, you know, a discussion ensues because a slug is found in a body, and the discussion that comes up is whether or not the slug is made of silver, and the deputy coroner says it probably isn't silver. Because those are only good for werewolves.
That's too funny. Okay, so you're telling me that a vampire cannot get killed by a silver bullet, but garlic can be used, and this would deter them from coming close to you and so on. So I'm having a hard time with this. Tell me about garlic.
Well, it's not only garlic. I mean, it was amazing when I started... When I started looking around, the things that people would do, if somebody was thought to be a vampire, in Romania, and they had to do with the culture and where geographically the vampire could be. For example, in the Balkans, you can kill a vampire by shooting it or drowning it, and then at a funeral service by sprinkling it with holy water or by performing an exorcism. Now, in Romania, you need to place garlic in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, as recently as the 18th century, as a precaution, you should shoot a bullet into the coffin. Now, it doesn't make any difference whether it's copper clad or silver.
Oh, that is too funny. Let's talk about exorcism. So, in your research, how did you find, you know, how does exorcism relate? Did the vampire get exorcised? And,
well, I didn't use exorcism in the book.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
No, because most of the vampires that turned up in the book were pretty well gone by the time we found them.
Oh, this is too funny. They're too funny. So, you know, the other thing thing that actually has been coming into play in the last couple of years is our zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, they're different from vampires, but they're still something that people are just really afraid of, yet fascinated on the other hand.
I know, and they're not as romantic. I kind of left them out of the book. You know, one of the things...
Romantic.
Well, you know, I think the whole... If there is a romanticism about... because you always... At least since Dracula, there was this sort of romantic attachment between the vampire and the lover.
Yeah.
And of course, Dracula was written towards the end of the 19th century. Bram Stoker, 700 pages. Oh my God. I have not read it. My wife said she tried, and she couldn't make it through it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that I sense that was sort of the beginning of this this sort of romanticist relationship between the vampire and his victim, and so I got to thinking. What is it today that is making, as you say, they're so popular?
Mm-hmm.
What is it today that's making vampires so popular? I mean,
yeah.
It's not, I don't think it's just among the teenagers, do you?
No, it's not. And it's like, I'm having a hard time grasping around this. Why the fascination? It's like, I don't get it. I really don't. And I know that a lot of people do, and it's like they're fascinated.
Well, are you seeing a lot of books on vampires?
Yes.
Possibly?
Yes.
That's interesting. I got to thinking about it when, of course, you're much younger than I, much, much younger. But when
I don't think so.
When I was growing up in the 50s and the 60s, I can remember that the fascination of my generation then was with space.
Yes. Yes, that's my generation, yeah.
And I remember on television there was this this television show, and I, you know, and if you see reruns of it now, if you ever run across it, it's like a Swiss Family Robinson thing called Lost in Space. And it's really amateurish when you look at it now. But it was all the rage back then. And then, of course, you had Star Trek and the Star Trek movies, and then you had all those horror movies of the 1950s and the 1960s with those fake creatures. This was before you had all this tremendous animation coming out of Hollywood, and all those old Japanese films. You remember of them with Godzilla and all the rest of that. And these were all the rage in the 50s and the 60s. And today, it looks like things like the Twilight Saga and everything like that. These are the things that seem to have everybody very much entranced. And the only thing that I can think of. Is that it's just a fascination with the unknown, and in this case, it's more or less the supernatural. And I would say also in the case of young women, or maybe even older ladies, there's this whole concept of forbidden love, this whole... And boy, this is really a stretch to say that the love between a vampire and his victim is a Romeo and Juliet love story. But there's this whole thing throughout a romanticized vampire story, certainly, a forbidden love.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's got to be obviously more complex than that, and for each individual person, a very a very personal thing, but obviously there's some fascination here, both with the unknown and the strangeness of the whole thing and the danger. And maybe it's the bad boy syndrome, having had two teenage girls who fortunately grew out of those years. I wasn't sure I was ever going to survive that. But there was always the bad boy, especially in high school, that I feared would be lurking out there somewhere, and I had to keep my eye out for it. So maybe that's all part of it.
Yeah, it could be, and how do we know? After all these years, you know, the story changes and changes and changes, and say we don't even know where it started, but... you know, we talked about the Middle East, Far East, the Balkans, et cetera, is where, you know, the vampires were really prominent. But, you know, about the Americas, it seems to me that we do hear of them, and particularly maybe, you know, here in the United States would be Louisiana. Other places would be a lot of the Caribbean islands, you know, the voodoos.
Right.
That kind of thing. And that's all related to vampires, too. So in your research... how did you find anything that really kind of said how the vampires came to the Americas?
Not really. I think they came more through our European ancestry than anything else.
Yeah.
And certainly through the literature. There's no question that the book Dracula. And then, of course, the movie was a seminal event in the whole genre, and I think the connection to the United States was probably through the European ancestry, probably than any other connection, because if when we think of vampires. And we look at the movies, for example, or just our whole concept of vampires, I think is tied more closely to the whole concept that came out of Romania and that area.
Yeah.
And so the connection would have been through there.
I think so, too. So, gosh, this has been really interesting. We've just spent a whole time here talking about vampires. This is great.
Okay.
Yeah, because this is what your book, Lilith, Demon of the Night, is all about, is vampires. And as we had talked earlier, you know, there's a real fascination for vampires, and a lot of people are reading books. So thank you so much. And, Ted, tell our listening audience the website address.
Well, the website address is very easy. It's www.theodore, T-H-E-O-D-O-R-E, dash, cone, C-O-H-E-N, as in Nancy, dash, novels, plural, N-O-V-E-L-S.com.
There you go, listeners. Now, that's been really interesting, hasn't it? So if you didn't know anything about vampires before, this little bit of information that Ted gave us, I'm sure will just spark some interest. And I really do encourage you to check out this book by Theodore Jerome Cohen. It's called Lilith, Demon of the Night. We had one of our reviewers review it, and she loved it. She is a vampire expert. She loves vampire books. And she really, really liked this one. So that says a lot. And I really do encourage you to check it out. Ted, thanks.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
And listeners, this is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.